Welcome to season 3 of And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. I've written with hundreds of artists and writers over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life, the industry, politics, composition, whatever. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. I'm producing this with the great Joe London, Big Deal Music Publishing, and Mega House Music Management. If you want to listen to the songs we discuss in this podcast, follow us on our socials, find out about special events, or buy some of our merchandise, go to our website, www.andthewriteris.com. Oh, and if you enjoy And the Writer Is, please rate and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's songwriter, artist, genius has crafted multiple number one songs, been Grammy nominated, and has virtually influenced every songwriting session in the business. I love it that she popped on the scene as a featured artist and has since won Hitmaker of the Year at the Billboard Women in Music Awards, in addition to 2017 CSAC Songwriter of the Year. She's one of those prodigies who wrote number one smashes like Boom Clap, Fancy, and Same Old Love before she could legally rent a car. Genuinely, there's not another female artist who collaborates better with other female artists than our guest today. And the writer is the brain behind my first number one pop song, Charlie XCX.
Wow. Woo. What an intro. That was cool.
Well, you know.
Yeah, nice one.
And that's it for today.
Cool. Okay,
there you go. We can call it out. Okay. No, you know, I am curious about this. You know, there really aren't a lot of there aren't a lot of artists, female artists, who are willing to have a bunch of other female artists on their albums. There tends to, historically, I feel like there's sort of like this isolationist vibe, or when there's a female artist, they tend to have a male feature, right? another male feature. But is that on purpose?
I mean, I actually kind of disagree with that. Like, I feel like the culture around that is really changing. Maybe it's only recently, but I feel like definitely in my kind of peripheral vision, I feel like there's a lot of female artists who are like constantly collaborating with people and like want to, at least. I think, you know, I even like when I think about like big pop songs like Bang Bang, and like when like Beyonce and Lady Gaga do like Telephone, and like there was like the flip version of that song as well, and like Rihanna Shakira together, like Beyonce, Shakira. Like, I feel like that there are moments where it happens, and I feel like more and more it's happening. Like, in my sort of scene of friends, like, we're always trying to jump on people's songs and stuff. But I do take your point. It's, like, rarer for it to be, like, a girl and a girl on, like, a big top 40
record. It's also that it's prime. And I'm just looking, you know, even just on the albums that you've put out.
Yeah.
One of the things that's really exciting about it is not you promoting it, but all the people you co-write with and that are featured on your albums promote you, because they all feel like you are kind of like the advocate for something.
Maybe,
other than
yeah.
just songs. Like, at least, because I mean, people are always like, I don't know. I guess when I see them, when I see not you posting stuff, but other people posting it, they seem to look at you as somebody who is kind of maybe opening doors or at least not putting the usual gender stamp on people.
Right.
And I just think that's really, that is progressive.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's such a huge part of like what I do is about collaboration. I really think I've only truly realized that in the past year, actually. Like, I mean, I've done a lot of collaborations in the past, but I think I've only recently sort of begun to play to my sort of strength as a curator, and I really enjoy it. Like I really love working with new people. Like I don't really have any interest in working with like the person who's got the number one at the moment, because that's like the new hot shit or whatever. Like I'm not immediately like gravitating towards that person for that reason. Like if they're a cool person, then cool. And I think a lot of people are like that, but for me, I'm more excited about finding like new artists who have their own really unique voice, even if only like 100 people are listening to them at that point in time. Like, I don't know. I really enjoy building a community around what I do and building a world and having it be this kind of big, like, friend thing. And I think that happens a lot in like songwriting, you know, like behind the scenes. Like there's sometimes like days when you write a song with like 3 people, and then sometimes days where you write a song randomly with 8 people and you're like, well, what's going on? But it's like fun and collaborative, and I think I want to do that kind of stuff with artists as well, you know. Like I like it when there are lots of people there, and I like that community and just basically creating this kind of like party vibe with everything that I do, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
When, you know, I want to go through some of the chronology, but when you came onto the scene, I feel like a lot of, you know, in quote, pop artists were really clean. Recordings were really clean. It was like an elevated, almost Disney Nickelodeon, like elevated into like, we're now pop stars. Mm. Not just specifically people who are signed to Disney and Hollywood. Not that. It's the fact that it was so, it was just clean. It sounded clean. And in a way, pop was a bad word to, I don't know, sort of like, it just wasn't cool. And somehow, this, you're part of this crew of artists that are like proudly pop and are still really cool. Do you consider yourself pop?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I love pop music and always have. And I think, you know, what I do definitely kind of explores different alleyways that lead to pop, but I definitely consider myself as pop. And I don't know, I just think like, I think that I agree with you. There was definitely a time, probably about like 10, maybe 5 years ago, maybe somewhere 7.5 years ago, where pop was like super clean. It wasn't cool to be like, I'm pop, you know. It was like, I don't know. I think it was because it was kind of like most of the big, especially female pop artists then, were very much controlled kind of by, they were like marketed products, you know. And I don't necessarily think that that's like a bad thing, but I think it was like that was the way that you broke a female artist. There was like a lot of strategy, there was a lot of like people with opinions going into this sort of face of a product thing, and I think like part of that really worked. But then I think like as that model kind of fell apart, and you know, there was space for women to really like have an opinion on the music that they make and the sound that they create and the way that they dress, and, you know, strong women coming forward with ideas about the way that they wanted their music to be. I think that's when pop really kind of like opened up, you know, like with people like Lorde and like myself maybe, and, you know, and like even like later, I think with people like Selena, like really kind of like pushing like what she had been into this like much more kind of interesting, like risky thing, sort of a thing. Like I feel like pop kind of changed because women, the mold was broken, you know. It's like, it was less about like the label creating a product and more about like the artist, like saying whatever the fuck they wanted to say, you know. And I think I sort of begun releasing music around the time where that just began to happen. Like I Love It, for example, like that. I remember when that song, when I wrote that song and when we put it out, like everyone was like so freaked out by that song. Everyone was like, this is so aggressive for radio. Like what? And I listen to it now and it's like, not at all, you know, but at the time I think it was this big like risk or whatever.
Well, explain the story behind that. I mean, you end up with, you know, this Iconopop song came out and it's featuring you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of you in it.
Well, yeah.
And so, and I like those girls a lot. I had, same. You know, we, you know, been able to work with them, mm-hmm. you know, totally respect them. Also good curators and a good hang and all that. Yeah. But this really, that really was sort of the, kind of the coming out party for, like you were saying, before that, it was a little cleaner and that came out and every session was, we want this song.
Dude, I know.
It's every so stressful. And you must have gotten that.
Yeah.
And if I'm getting that as a guy who's like 10 years older than you, then for sure you are getting it a ton. And, you know, we need more of that.
Right.
And, you know, lyrically, it's like, it's the fact, it's a good example. It reminds me of, and we interviewed Jack Antonoff last year, and he's talking about how the chorus needs to be something that can be used for a lot of things, and the verse are where you tell the story. And you're talking about, you know, driving off a bridge, and then the chorus is as simple as I Love It.
Yeah.
And then it's somehow it's used in a car commercial, even though you just talked about driving off a bridge.
Yeah.
You know, it really interesting how that lyric kind of became usable in every facet. But explain how that song was kind of written.
Well, it's so crazy because, I mean, everything you just said, like, about songwriting and, like, TV syncs, and I had no idea about that, any of that stuff when I was writing this song. I mean, like,
well, I guess maybe even before you tell the story, to start from how you started writing songs then, because that really is your first hit. So what takes you from being a kid to being the person who writes I Love It?
So I guess I started making music when I was 14. I made some like really like embarrassing, like I made some like embarrassing bad music, and it's all on the internet for everyone to check out. So please do at your free will.
Are there videos that you put up?
No videos. But the songs are there, and there's probably some like live performances because I basically like I started putting my music on MySpace, and then this guy who was...
As Charlie XCX?
Yeah, as Charlie XCX.
Where does the name come from?
It was my MSN screen name. It's very lame. It was like...
That's how you got your name?
Yeah.
That's so good.
I know, yeah. And I'm kind of glad it was just as simple as that because it could have been something way whack, you know? It could have been like really, really bad. But anyway, so I was basically recording all these demos. I had this like 8-track little mini desk and I would like play everything myself. I had this like Yamaha keyboard and I was like making beats. They were like really bad and out of time, but it kind of worked. It was very like bedroom DIY, like, but not in a way that is now, you know?
How old were you at the time?
I was 14. And I was putting all these songs online and the songs were called like, I Want to Be Darth Vader, Dinosaur Sex. I did like a Soulja Boy cover. It was like really like bizarre, weird stuff.
What did your friends and family think?
My friends were, they were kind of like confused, I think. And my family, like my parents have always been like super supportive of me, which has been really, really cool. And they were just like, okay, cool. She's like doing this, like great. And I was putting these songs on MySpace, and then this guy who was called Chaz Cool, he was a guy who ran a lot of like illegal raves in London and like warehouse parties and stuff. He hit me up on MySpace and was like, hey, like, do you want to come and play these raves? Like, your songs are really cool. And I was like, great, cool. Like, I'm going to go and play a rave in London. Like, and I lived in Hertfordshire when I was growing up, which is very like leafy green, kind of nice countryside vibe. Like, I'd never partied in London. Like, my reference to partying in London was that TV show Skins, you know? That was, like, what in my head, that's what it was, right? And, like, all these, like, scenes on MySpace that I would see, like, the Ed Banger crew, like, those, like, parties were, like, what I was kind of, like, looking at on the internet and stuff, and kind of what my music was inspired by as well. So this guy asked, this like 30 something year old guy asked me to like come to London and like play a rave at 4 a.m. and I just asked my parents thinking like, oh fuck, this is like not gonna go well, and they were like, yeah, let's go, like we'll take you. So they just like would drive me to London at the weekends, and I would start performing at these raves at like literally like 4 a.m. like the first one was in this derelict peanut factory that was like shut down, and there were loads of people dressed as zebras there. It was like really bizarre, like weird stuff, right? And so I did that for like a year and a half, and
your parents are just, are they standing with you while you're performing?
No, they're like just at the back watching. Like my mom was really, my mom was like really like just kind of a bit nervous, I think, about the whole thing. And my dad was like loving it, you know?
How are they that open-minded? Even just being a bit nervous while your 14-year-old yeah. daughter is singing in front of people dressed as zebras at 4 a.m. seems like that would be hard to convince a parent to be like, no, drive me to this thing. This is a good idea. It's good for my career.
I don't know. I mean, I can't say why they were into it, but they were.
And they just got it.
They just got it, kind of. I guess my dad's, like, pretty creative, and when he was younger was, like, you know, doing stuff in, like, the art scene and was, like, running concert venues and stuff like that.
Oh, so were they in music then?
I mean, on a very, like, local level. And my mom was a nurse, uh-huh. so she wasn't. But I guess, I don't know, I just have to be like really thankful for them for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so that's how I started. I was like performing at these things. I was like recording more demos. I was like very inspired by, yeah, mainly Ed Banger, by like Justice and Uffy and people like that. And like, I just wanted to make music because I thought it would make me cool. Like, because I was like a loser. And I was like, if I make music, I can be cool, you know?
So were you a loser?
I was like kind of on the edge of like, I was just like a nerd. Like, I studied really hard. Like I had to get good grades. Like, that was like a condition of like me being able to go and play these parties. Like, I had to like work really hard. I had to get good grades. Like, I wasn't allowed to like go to sleepovers and like stay at people's houses. Like, I wasn't allowed to like hang out in town after school. Like, I was doing my homework, and like, so I was kind of a nerd. I was like a nerd, really. And I was also like learning to play piano and like whatever. I was a nerd. So music, I was like, if I do music, then I'll be cool.
Did it work? Because well, it kind of did, at least in those circles.
A bunch of people dressed as zebras. Watch the demos of you. You can listen to the demos online and tell me if you think Dinosaur Sex was a cool song. It wasn't, but I mean, I felt cool for a
kinda
while.
Kind of like the concept, though.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
It's like maybe we're extinct now or something.
Yeah.
our love has gone away.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But so that's how I started. And then I got signed. Like, I had these like labels and different managers come down to these raves at like 4 a.m. and would watch me play. And I signed to Atlantic, and that was like the week before I turned 16. And then
that's Ed Howard, your
Ed Howard, yeah.
Did he come at 4 o'clock?
Yeah,
in the morning?
Ed Howard was coming to the raids. The first time he saw me was actually in a pub. I was performing like upstairs on a bar stool. Not at 4, that was more like 1 or 2. But yeah, he was there from the beginning, and he really, I don't know if he got it, but he knew that I was doing something kind of interesting, I suppose. And so, yeah, I signed with them just before my 16th birthday. And then basically, like, spent 2 years. I was still in school. I was finishing my, we call them GCSEs, which I guess is like
GEDs here.
I don't know. Like, it's when you're 16, the exams you take.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was just done
SATs
then.
Or
SATs, right. Yeah. So I'd just done them. And then I basically came to LA and started writing.
Well, how are you not the coolest kid in school when you have a record deal?
I mean,
a record deal at 16?
I was like, I don't know, because I just felt like my friends would, they didn't ask me about it. Like, I didn't really talk about it. They didn't ask me about it. Like, none of my friends were coming to these raves with me at 4 a.m. because
their
parents
were like,
they were just like, oh, she just put a Soulja Boy cover on the internet. Like, cool. Like,
and they're whatever, still, and they still think of you probably as like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They
think
of you as like a fellow, like third grader, not as, you know, who grew up with them, not like
rock star. I never really got that like sense of like, I'm the coolest person. Like, I was still like kind of lame. But
are you still trying to impress them?
No. They're also like my friends, like us with me now still, like they were like Twiggy in there. It's like my like friend from when I was 11 and stuff. She still doesn't think I'm
cool.
Shout out Twiggy. Yeah. So I came to LA and started doing the kind of like writing stuff, you know, like going to the studio every day with a different person, writing songs and just doing the circuit, I guess.
Did you like it?
Because
coming out, being 16, introduced to a still probably primarily male world and older men and being in a new city and all that, that must be somewhat, it's unusual at best.
I mean, you know? I didn't not like it, you know? I think the thing that bothered me was I didn't feel free in LA. Like, in London, you can, like, drink and party when you're, like, a kid, you know? And here, I mean, I didn't, like, look, like, older. I didn't know how to, like, dress up to, like, go out or get in anywhere. And I also didn't have any friends really here. So I just felt like I was, like, writing and like going home, and I would like have an in and out, and that was like my life for a while, and it was fun, and I was very like thankful to be there, but I kind of just felt like I was like, I want to fucking party and like have friends here and like be like in it more. I felt like I was like dipping in, you know, and I think I was writing cool songs, but I think I was just writing songs that were, you know, anyone could have sung them. It just felt like kind of an exploration, but I think I learned a lot during that time, you know, because I'd never really done real sessions before, so I learned like about, you know, how to be in the studio, how to interact, how to give people space to breathe, and you know, just learn about stuff you don't even think about, like hip-hop time. I learn about, like, you know, if you're doing a hip-hop session, like, don't go on time, like go like 3 hours late because no one's probably gonna show up for ages. And I learn about like just like culture stuff that you wouldn't know if you weren't a songwriter, you know. So it was really valuable and really amazing, and some of the songs I wrote there were really cool.
In those sessions, were there any of those sessions where you in a way wish you could redo? So I feel like there were sessions in the beginning of my career where I worked with some really big names where maybe I wasn't ready for it. And I mean, fortunately, there was one, this is your story, not mine, but the first time I met Torin McKell, Stargate, I went in to work with them, and they put me into the other room at Westlake than the room they were in. And they just gave me a bunch of tracks. And I think I said this story a little bit on McKell's, but you know, it was like Esther 1, Esther 2, Esther 3, because they were working a lot with Esther Dean.
Yeah.
And I just remember recording this one song, writing this one song that was really not very good. And I think Tor walked in and like peeked his head and then like walked out. And I was so fortunate that they didn't remember me from that session, because there's no way they'd ever ask me back. Do you know what I mean? Like, there were some moments of like early on sessions where I'm just happy that like things worked out slowly.
Yeah,
because
I did some really bad sessions, like I'm sure at the beginning. I mean, we all have bad sessions, but I don't think there was one, I don't know, there wasn't anything like really bad. I mean, I was just writing average songs, I think, you know. But then basically the day before I was leaving LA after, like, I'm kind of jumping around now. Like, I was like going back to school, like working, and then would come out. This is like from the period of me being like 16 to 18. This is me like coming to LA, writing blah, 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 and like going back and forth and stuff. And on one of those, and I was at the time, I was writing for my album, like my first album. So I wasn't even thinking about being a songwriter at all. I didn't even know that was a real job. I was just like, oh, I'm like an artist making my music, you know? So I was really trying to find my sound. And then I met this guy, Ariel Rechtscheid, who we like really clicked. And he had this song called Stay Away that he had kind of half written, and he played it to me, and I just loved it. And we finished it, and then I had to like fly out the next day and go like back to school. And that was like the first song that I wrote for myself, for like the Charlie XCX project. And it felt, he was like definitely somebody who was very different from all the other people I had been working with. I'd been working with like a lot of like, I've been working with like Kojak and like people in like that kind of a scene. And Ariel, you know, was somebody who I guess at that time was like working on this girl Lights and had done like the Plain White Tees song and stuff, and he was sort of from a different space, and we just really connected and clicked. And that was like the first Charlie XCX song, I suppose, that where I was like, oh, this is like my sound. And so we put that out, and it was like cool, and people liked it, and I still love that song. And then I went to Sweden because Ed, my A&R, was like, Sweden is like a place where pop songs are written. I didn't know that. I was just like, where's Sweden? Like, I'd never even like been, like, I didn't even think, you know, at this point in time, I wasn't really well versed in like ABBA and like Max Martin and like the whole like story of pop, you know? So I was just like, cool, I'm like going to Sweden, great. And I went with my boyfriend at the time, and I had this session with this guy, Patrick Berger, and I don't know why, but for some reason I was just like, I'm really nervous. Like, I don't want to go. And it's kind of not usually like that for me, but I felt really anxious, and I felt a bit like just worried about the session. Maybe because it was like, I didn't know about him that much. I don't know. But I basically said to him, just send me a couple of beats and I'll write some ideas in my hotel room. So he sent me this crazy like beat for What Was I Love It at the time, and the track was super different. This is before Style of I did any like additional production on this song, so the beat was totally different. And I remember I just sat in my hotel room in bed, and my boyfriend was there, and I recorded this idea into GarageBand on my computer, honestly, in like 20 minutes, and I didn't think, I was like, this sucks. And I asked my boyfriend, I was like, is this cool? And he was like, it's kind of lame. And I was like, okay, cool, forget about it. Like, didn't think anything of it. Worked on this other beat for ages. And I was like, this is amazing. I don't even know what that song was now. And then the next day I went to the studio and I'd emailed Patrick the demos. And he was like, this song is crazy. And I'm thinking like, oh, the other one that I spent ages on. And he's like, plays, I love it. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, like we should like cut this vocal, like let's do it, it's so good, you know. And I was so confused, and I cut the vocal, and then I was like, okay, bye, like it was weird, like whatever. And we got on really well, and I really liked him, and since then we worked really hard together, like a lot of times. But then a month later he was like, oh, like Iconopop heard I Love It and they love it. I was like, all right, cool, great, like they should just sing it. And so they just came and like put vocals over my vocals, and I just didn't know. I was just like, cool, I guess that song's gonna go out. Like, I didn't know anything about like, you know, leaving my vocals on a song. I didn't know anything about like the possibility of a song being big. I didn't know anything about money or like TV syncs or any, I just didn't know. And I sent the song to Ed, and he was like, you should sing this song. I was like, I don't know, it's kind of lame, like this isn't cool. And I'd made this whole album with Ariel that was like very different from I Love It, you know, it was nowhere near as like high octane, or and it just felt like, I was like, it doesn't fit, this feels wrong, it just feels wrong. And so I was just like, I don't want to do it. Like, it's weird. Like, I don't want to do it. And so then the song came out and I started hearing it around and I was like, wow, that sounds like me. Cool. Like, they did a really good job. And then Ed was like, no, this like is you. Like, you're in this song. Yeah. And then I was like, oh yeah, like, I guess I just sort of said that was cool. Like, I didn't know that there was a whole thing of like, I just didn't really know. So then my vocals are on the song and my label are like, you need a credit. I'm like, okay, cool. So we got a credit. And then it's just that whole time is such a blur because then everything really went crazy. Like, the song started getting synced in, like, I think the first thing was Girls, the TV show, and it was in this like scene where like Lena Dunham's getting fucked up on ecstasy, and it was like a really big like moment for the song and the film. And then from there it was on like Snooki and JWoww and like some Samsung thing, I think, and like just like any, it was everywhere. And then
everywhere
I was like, whoa. Like, and then people were like, you're a songwriter. And then everyone was like, we want I Love It again, 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 and again. And I was like, I wrote this song in fucking 20 minutes. And I didn't even know what the song was about. Like, when I started seeing Iconopop doing interviews about how it was about a breakup, I was like, oh, like, cool, I guess it is. Like, I was just saying words. Like, I had no, I wasn't like, oh, like, the verse should be like this, and then the chorus goes here, and I need a really universal phrase. I was just saying words. Like, I had no idea, like, how to structure the song, like, nothing. So then all these people were like, we want this again. Like, can you, like, recreate this? And I was just like, no, I, like, do not even know how I made it. It was weird.
Do you look back on that song and feel like it should have been yours, or do you feel comfortable?
I think, you know, I think at the time the song came out and was blowing up, I think I would be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit jealous, probably. Like, I was like 19 now, and like, no one gave a fuck about my album, like, that I just put out. You know, I think it got reviewed really well and was like critically like acclaimed or whatever, but like maybe like 10 people bought it. So, and then like I Love It was everywhere and was like doing this whole thing. So whilst in interviews, I think I was pretty much like, you know, it's fine, like, they just use my voice, like, whatever, like, maybe being a little bit of a bitch about it, but also being like, it's cool. I think, yeah, I was kind of like, damn, like, did I miss out on something here? Like, should I have kept it? Should I have listened to Ed? Like, you know, and I think there was that question for sure. But I can honestly, like, look back now that I understand kind of the industry a little bit more, I think that me not being on that song really did sort of give me a path as a songwriter, which I might not have had I been the face of that song, because I wouldn't have been able to be in the studio. I would have had to be promoting the song. And also, like, I really do feel like there is this consistent doubt about whether, like, a female singing her own song, like, did she write it? Like, even if she did, there's always the, like, did she? Like, you know? So I just feel like, for me,
why,
like, I don't know. I literally don't know. It's really crazy.
I mean, that's like the biggest, when people become writers and they realize that there's so many guys who don't write their songs. And, like, the biggest of the male artists don't write.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest of the female artists
do.
Write.
They write. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but so I can just look back on that now, and I feel really good about it, because I think, you know, with, even though, like, the normal person walking down the street had no idea who I was or had any kind of connection with me in that song, like, you might have known, or like Stargate might have known, and, you know, Stargate signed me because of that song. So I feel really like happy with how it played out. And I was really happy for the girls, because they're like party animals and they like deserve to party to that song. So it felt good. I felt really happy with it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So then Boom Clap. 2 years later, Boom Clap comes out, and it's part of a soundtrack. I shouldn't put words in your mouth, but I guess there's no way you assume that, as at least for me, I think like when a song comes out on a soundtrack, at that time there aren't like a ton of songs that are being that are climbing radio charts that are primarily from a soundtrack.
Right.
And that goes to number one on radio.
Yeah.
So here's the first journey where you're now the artist.
Right. Again, like, it's funny, right, when you say it, because I don't take time to like sit back and be like, wow, that was cool, you know?
Well, see, so this is and a convenient
so
nice, hour
so
for
you. Thank you, yeah. But
we should hang out more often.
We should. But that song again was like, that was another song that Patrick and I wrote together. And I was like, let's pitch this to Hilary Duff. I heard she's looking, like, she wants to do something kind of cool. Like, it'd be really cool. Like, let's, like, send it to her or whatever. And Patrick had, like, worked with Hilary Duff, like, years and years ago, like, when she was, like, doing the Lizzie McGuire situation. So I was like, great, we've got an in. We can get it to her. Cool. And so he sent it to her team and they were like, no, like, we're not into this. And I was like super sad. And then the song just sat around for ages. And Ed again was like, hey, you should sing this song. This could be really good. And I was like, I don't know, Ed. I don't really want it. I don't think this song's cool. Like, we shouldn't do this. And he was like, do you remember like the last time you said this to me? And I was like, yeah, but this is different. This one, like, really isn't cool. I don't know, like, whatever. And then,
so the goal is to write a song with you where you're like,
but seriously, that's it. Like, every song, it's like, it's that. That is, the, like, generally when I know it's, like, good is when I'm like, nah, I don't know. But, yeah, so he was like, please, can you just stay on the song? There's this soundtrack, this movie, Fault in Our Stars, and... like, he was like, read the book. And so I got the book, I read it, and then I like went to see the movie before it came out or whatever, and like cried in the screening, and they had my song in it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, like, this is like a thing, like, kids are like into this book and this is a whole thing. I mean, you're right, I had no idea that it would become such a huge moment. I mean, I just didn't think I'm not going to get a number one. That's so weird. Like, I'm not that. I just didn't see myself as that kind of person ever. I think I just still saw myself as like, I don't know. I'm just like I'm just like a loser. I'm like, I don't see myself as like a pop star at that point. You
Did
know?
That make you famous?
Boom Clap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I'm famous. So
do you get noticed now?
Like, when I'm in specific places, yes. But if I'm like walking around outside now, no, I don't. You know. So I don't really see myself as like a famous person. Really.
I mean, you know, on the heels of that, Fancy goes number one, and that's like a different level number one.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a worldwide number one. That was like, yeah. Not just. That changed the whole dialogue of the music business again. I mean, like, I Love It did, and Fancy are two songs that are, like, career-defining kind of records,
yeah.
And you had them relatively early. I mean, Boom Clap, obviously a number one song, but there's no doubt that Fancy kind of hit a chord around the world that was like,
totally.
Oh, this is a whole other thing. Were you famous then?
I just don't think I'm famous. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think
But maybe did that make you a pop? Like, what did
I think it made me like a pop star? But I also think the thing that, you know, the thing with Fancy was it made me a co-pilot. It kind of like it cemented me as this feature thing, you know? And I think that has been like, I read articles about myself because I'm cool like that. And like, that's the thing that is like frequently said about me and my career. It's like, oh, Charlie, like the co-writer, the collaborator, the like the right-hand man, like whatever, you know? And I think that Fancy really like cemented me as that to like the general public, and like then as to like the people in, you know, the songwriting world, they like kind of understood it that I had like written that chorus and like kind of had proved myself as a songwriter, whatever. I don't know, like what, like I Love It wasn't like a fluke, and neither was Boom Clap. It was like, oh, like she can actually do this. But yeah, I think it less, I was like the support act, you know? And I think that's been like a story that has kind of been on repeat throughout my career. And going back to what we were saying at the beginning, like I think now I've sort of realized how to harness that in a way that is very like unique to me, in terms of like, rather than calling it like a support act, calling it being like, I'm the creator, like I'm putting people on, like I'm the person who's like introducing you to this person and this person and this person, and we make a load of records together, and I make like mixtapes, and I do these shows where I have like 15 artists come out all at once and like play, and like you're never gonna see that anywhere else unless you're at my show, like in like the Charlie XCX universe. So I think that whole Fancy time, it kind of that's I think when I began to sort of realize the potential that I could have in that kind of a role. And I think that role is like valid, maybe sometimes even more valid than other roles. Like I'm into being an underdog, and I'm into being this like mass collaborator, you know?
So. I think that's like probably the best compliment you can give yourself in a way. And, you know, to be a collaborator in this business where everyone has an ego.
Yeah.
And to still be confident in coming in and knowing that you may do more of the work than the other writers, or you might be, your vocals might be all over it, but you might not be the face of it, or you might be the face of it. Mm-hmm. But the idea of being open-minded all the way into years past a song coming out,
yeah,
is really difficult for a lot of people. It's like, it's truly the, it's the holy grail of a co-writer is somebody right. who understands that it doesn't have to be, that if you make everyone else shine, you shine too.
Yeah,
that
totally.
That if you bring the community to you, that's...
Totally. And that's how I treat like every aspect of what I do. Like, because, you know, it's more fun when you're doing stuff with other people. Like, when I was promoting Boom Clap, it was fine. But when I was doing Fancy with Iggy, it was cool because we were like doing stuff together. We were like performing shit together. Like, and it was just suddenly like way more interesting and way more fun. And we were like taking each other into these different spaces and jumping up on stage with each other. And I don't know, it just felt like so much more exciting. And I think I feel like that in the studio. I feel like that when I'm making my own music. And I don't know, I think it takes me back to like when I was younger, just starting to make music. I was always really inspired by Ed Banger, because when I looked at their MySpace, it felt like everyone was at like a party together, and it was this gang thing, you know? It's like this cool like party of people who were like working together and doing stuff. And that's what I was inspired by. I just think all along I've wanted to create that. And you know, I don't care if I'm not the face of it all the time. Like, it's cool to like leave like nuggets of info, like whether it's like your voice being on a song, or like if I like co-write something or whatever. But it's all about, for me, it's all about like the people that I am, like the gang. It's like this gang mentality thing in like a positive way, you know.
Well, in this small gang once in 2014 We were all at Westlake, and there was this writing camp mm-hmm. that was Stargate, Benny, Steve Mack, Amar, I think Dano, Yumi. I don't know. I feel like there were other people there. Maybe Basker. I don't remember who else was there. But yeah. all I remember is that you were writing Break the Rules in one room, and then I think you left recording maybe vocals on that mm-hmm. to come into the other room and write Same Old Love. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah,
I believe
yeah.
that's the same camp.
Yeah.
So within like a matter of a day, if not the same day, you end up writing your follow-up single, recording your follow-up single with Steve in one room,
yeah.
walking across the hall, literally walking in the room, and we write Same Old Love that mm-hmm. same day.
Yeah.
Do you know on a day like that that, oh yeah, that's going to be my follow-up song and that song's going to be huge?
No, like never. I mean, it's funny with Break the Rules, I was like, oh God, I'm so embarrassed. This is like a shady thing for me to say, but I'm just going to say it, okay? With Break the Rules, I was like, a really stupid person's going to end up singing this song. Like I said that to someone and then I ended up singing it. So like I just felt like it was like one of those like crazy like songs that like people are gonna hate, you know, like people are gonna be like, oh, this is like so stressful, you know, and then like cut to like 3 months later it's like my single. And like I was speaking to Tim Blacksmith about it because he knew that I felt that way about the song, and he was like, ha, told you so, or
yeah,
whatever.
Because exactly.
the song like did really well in Europe and became actually something that I really loved and enjoyed playing, and I think something that became really, even though the perspective in that song is very young, I think it kind of definitely like cemented a certain ethos that is around me. Like people always consider me as this kind of like, it was cringy to say it myself, but
you were really young.
Yeah, no, totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I wasn't young. I don't know. I was like
20.
21?
Yeah. Fine. That, well, how old is, I mean, like, it's all relative, right?
No,
21
is young. It's young. But, like, the lyrical content in that song is like, it's like about, like, I think I say discotheque and, like, going to school.
You're doing middle fingers.
Right, totally.
So
totally,
it doesn't
totally.
Come across.
No, it's cool. I feel like I shaded the song so much now. I like the song.
I like the song.
But I can't even remember what I was talking about now. But whatever, that song happened.
Can we talk about Same Old
Love? Yeah, let's talk about it. It was our thing. Yeah.
So the track that we wrote it to, because we went in and just wrote to tracks. I don't think any of the other guys were in the room when we were writing most of it. Maybe they came in and out.
I think it was just you and me.
And the track was all like major chords on guitar, like sounded more like Katy Perry.
I don't even remember.
I'll play it for you.
Have you got? Oh, you've got the demo.
I have it.
Cool.
Well, I have like a voice note.
Okay.
Because it's like me mumbling like a melody with you mumbling a melody next uh-huh. to me, kind of thing, uh-huh. like trying to figure out what the next thing is.
Yeah.
But I think it's fascinating that you can go in and you write a song on a, you know, this track that sounds like one thing and then
yeah.
later it becomes something different. But mm-hmm. I want to hear your perspective of how Same Old Love happened.
You know, it's like, I don't really remember. I just remember you and me, we were sat on that sofa in the A room.
Yeah.
And I remember, because that's the first time we worked together. I remember you like went in and did like a vocal take on like the verses, and I was just like, oh my God, that's so cool. I could never write a verse like that. And I just remember being like, wow, Ross is so musical, because whenever I go in the vocal booth and like do stuff, I'm just like, nah, blah, blah, blah. I just shout, you know, whereas you have such like a sense of melody and like a map with the melodies that you create, whereas mine is generally just like pick a note and yell it for a while, you know.
But think about
it. It works.
That's
like, it's like, and so it was cool to have such, you know, I think we have like really different instincts when it comes to melody. I think that song is like a perfect example of where that can really work. I remember like we really worked the lyrics, I think. I think we mm-hmm. really, you always do that. Like I think you're really good at that. You really like push for like the best lyrics. And I remember that being the case on that song. I think we like sat down on that sofa for a while and we really like picked out all the like the best part. So that's a way. Is that how it happened? Have I
it
made
could
that
be.
Up?
Yeah, yeah.
How
I
do
think
you remember
it? Was.
It?
I think that's right. I mean, I remember when I think the exact opposite, where like you go and you sing, you sing a chorus, and there's a lot of melody in rhythm, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. If my Achilles heel as a writer is rhythm. I work really hard at making unique rhythms and it takes me a really long time. And you can shout on one note and it sounds really musical. And when you do something like, I'm so sick of that same old love, that's yeah. like, right? Obviously the loves is faster, but the idea of that one note, just doing that and just having that rhythm and the way that is very much like, that's a hard thing to. It's hard for me to do and have it sound like a melody.
Right.
If I do that, it just doesn't come across the same.
Right.
So it's
right.
like it's one of those things where I do think those two skill sets work.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
Where if you can find that kind of relationship, I mm-hmm. think that really is strong. But I do think about how, because you know, the producers on it. You're very close with, and so they sent you the song, and you guys had a whole other dialogue. That song for me, it was like I heard it that day, and then the next time I heard it, we were at a Gwen Stefani camp a year later, and I remember I saw you, and I was like, "Do you have a copy of that song?" And you're like, "Oh yeah, I think Big Pop Star is gonna cut it or something like that."
Wait, which one are we talking about? The one who did cut it. Wait.
The one who cut it before Selena.
Can we not say who that is?
I don't know, can we?
Yeah, fuck it.
Shit.
Rihanna! No, but that was crazy because she like tweeted the name of the song and then I heard the version and I was like, whoa, did you hear that version?
I just heard it maybe like a month ago.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah, it's cool. So that was cool and crazy and weird and stuff. And then I guess that didn't happen. And then I was like, oh, like the song's dead. And then... Selena came in and killed it, and that was really exciting.
Is that another situation where you were like, oh, maybe I should have
kept that? You know it was.
So I'm asking you, why not make that?
Well, I mean, it was funny because like I had never actually thought of that song for me ever. It was actually Tor from Stargate who sort of planted that seed because he sent me this. I don't know if you ever had this version. He sent me this version with like a rap of Iggy's on it from her song Black Widow, which I don't think had come out yet, or maybe it just come out or something like that. And I was like, wait, what is this? Iggy's doing a verse on this? I'm confused. And he was like, no, she's not, but she could. Like, this could be, like, a thing for you. And then he planted that seed in my head, and the Selena conversation was already kind of going, and I was like, should I, like, ask for this song? Like, and it became, like, a bit... confusing, and I was worried about it. I didn't want to like damage any relationship I had with her, and then I just thought, you know what, like I think that Selena singing that song at that point in time in her life was gonna be so much more powerful than me singing it, just because, you know, Selena obviously has that huge, very high profile relationship with Justin. And I feel like at that point, maybe they had broken up or like, I don't really know, but like, I don't know the personal ins and outs of it at all. But it just suddenly felt like that song felt really real coming from her and like really emotional and something quite bold and important for her to say, you know? So, I think when I then sort of listened to her version again, I was like, oh, wow, this is like really cool if she does this. And if I do it, it's a cool song. But if she does it, it's like a song that maybe like a lot of young girls, guys can relate to about like being hurt in a relationship, you know? So, I didn't do it. And I think that was the right decision.
Yeah, I hope that the last couple songs we wrote are ones that you're like, these songs suck.
And these songs suck.
They're just not my vibe.
Yeah.
And that, because
That's a good sign, generally.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's obviously a lot of songs that continue to come out. So I'm going to jump
jump.
I don't really want to, like, the Camila one is one thing, but to me, like, the song of last year that is, like, the most important one is Boys.
Cool.
I think that song is one of my favorite songs from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Video is genius.
Thank you.
How did that song come about, and why isn't that song played on the radio?
Good question,
everywhere,
Ross.
All the time.
That's a great question. So, you know, I didn't write that song.
I do know that.
Okay, cool. So that song was written by a lot of people. I feel like I meet people every other week who are like, I co-wrote on Boys. I'm like, cool, there's another one.
Come on in.
Yeah, but I think, and I don't want to miss out a key person, so just sorry in advance, because there are a lot of people on that song, but I think predominantly that song was written by Cass Lowe, Emily Warren, and produced by a guy called Yerka, with a J. Mm-hmm. Who I cut the vocal with. But basically, like, Ed Howard, the guy, he sent me the song and was like, what do you think of this song? And I remember I was on a promo tour in America, like driving around in a car, listening to this song on repeat. And I was just like, fuck, I have this really good idea for this video. Like, this video should be loads of boys just being really sexy things in a video, like eye candy, like Joe Jonas is gonna look hot, Charlie Puth is gonna look hot, Stormzy, like hot dudes doing things that either usually girls are often shown doing in videos, like washing a car or like floating around in a paddling pool or like eating provocatively. Like, I was just like, this feels like a really cool thing, you know? And I thought that the song was really good. Like, I really loved the song. And I think the coupling of the two together felt like really special. So I just said to Ed, like, I want to do the song. Like, I don't really have an ego about singing songs I haven't written. Like, I don't generally do it that much. But I also have done it, like, with Boys, a couple of songs on my album Sucker, one song on my latest mixtape. Like, I don't really have, like, it doesn't bother me, because I think that it takes just as much kind of charisma to write a song as it does to deliver it. And that's why I think there are so many incredible pop stars who maybe aren't as involved in the studio as others, but they're still like so inspiring to me and like hugely valid, because a song wouldn't mean as much if it wasn't coming from their mouth, you know? So I've never had an issue with like people who don't write their own songs and taking songs that have been written. So I just felt really good about it, and I felt like the video was really strong, and I directed the video myself and really like hustled on that video. Like, we shot people at Coachella, we shot people in LA, in New York, in Korea, in London, in Australia. Like, it was a lot of stuff, and we had, I think, like 58 dudes in that video. It was crazy.
And I mean, just massive stars and the whole thing. It's so good. Yeah. I mean,
but why it wasn't on the radio beats me. I don't know. There's, like, politics. It's politics, I think.
Do you know the politics?
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't want to be, like, shady to the label. But I just think, I mean, they were talking about, like, the streaming numbers aren't where it should be. And, you know, I think that's, like, a valid, like, concern for them, obviously. Because I think at that time, like, Bodak Yellow was, like, going crazy and stuff, and like, I think when you compare it to something like that, like, I think the streaming numbers weren't there, and they weren't like confident to take it to radio, like, just in case or whatever. But then at the same time, I was on tour with Halsey, like, playing that song in basically every state in America, not just in places like, you know, LA and New York, but in less sort of like hub cities where like every single person knew the words to that song in the arena that we were playing in. So I was a bit confused, and I felt a bit like, wait, like, what? Like, Also, the video, like, why would we not take this to radio? I don't know. I think that's, like, an area I still need to kind of, like, learn about a little bit more.
Yeah, and this also just shows that as much control as any of us think we have...
We don't.
Like, we just don't. I mean, yeah. you delivered... You were egoless enough to be like, I like that song, I can do this with it. And then you showcase not only the writers because of doing that, but all of the men that you have in the video, mm-hmm. and the people, you know, it's all about everybody. And it really is like a pop gem, the whole process of it.
Yeah.
That, you know, if that doesn't work, it's not because of you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's confusing. It it's like a whole thing.
But, it's confusing to me too. That's why I asked.
But, yeah, cool.
You know, I think that also probably puts you in some rarefied air as far as people who are willing to cut outside songs who've also written hit songs, mm-hmm. and not made it all about you on all fronts.
Right.
And to be open about that, that's part of the personality that will keep you in this game forever.
Right.
Because the person who walks away from that being like, yeah, yeah, I wrote Boys, and you start telling me a story about how, you know, it came to you while you were in an elevator and something like that. Like, you could easily do that right now, and I'd be like, oh, I didn't know that. And then, yeah. You know, there it is. That's the story when you were talking about when people are like, oh, it's about a breakup that I had.
Right,
not the story you told.
Right.
And I think that gives you, continues to give you credibility in this process, which is admirable. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Thanks.
Usually I say that to the end, but go fuck yourself. I'm just kidding. Okay, so here, what are we talking about? Oh, yeah. Before we end.
Yeah.
You're about to go on tour.
I am.
And it's a decent sized tour.
It's long and really a huge one. Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I'm opening for Taylor Swift.
The country girl.
She's kind of, she's like left. She's like indie left, right? Yeah. So I'm opening for Taylor. I'm stoked. I mean, I think it's really cool, like, that she's doing a tour with me and Camila, and I feel really excited about it, and I feel really like her team have been very kind of, it feels like really weirdly chill and like open, and again kind of like about like collaboration sort of thing, like they've been really like generous and kind, and feels really good. And I mean, Camila and I have written a lot together, and I love writing with her. Like, I think she's an example of somebody who, you know, obviously is an artist who came from like an extremely like pop formatted world. But I think she's a great songwriter. Like, I love writing with her, and I want to write with her for my stuff, for other people's stuff. Like, I think she has like such a distinct language. So hopefully, like, when we're on this tour, we can write some more things together. That would be really cool. But yeah, I'm excited about the tour. I'm excited. I'm going to put some new music out during it, hopefully. So that will also be fun. So it feels good.
The last thing we're going to do is I got to do five people, and you just tell me the first thing that comes off the top of your head.
Okay.
We'll call it five for five right now.
Okay. Ah!
Still don't really have a title for it.
No, five for five is good.
It is?
Yeah, yeah, really good. I'm so nervous.
And that's literally like, you know, okay. All right, five for five. We'll call for that, at least for this episode.
Okay.
Ed Howard.
Legend. Tall. He's tall. and he is classy. He's a classy man with good taste and great posture.
He's wonderful.
He is. He's one of the really solid, good, well-respected A&Rs, I would say.
Yeah. He has like a couple other artists that are doing okay too.
Yeah.
Ariel.
Ariel. Ariel's very special, extremely talented songwriter. I would say that we're so opposite. He's likes to take his time. I like to like rush through things. He's like one of my oldest friends in LA. He really like opened this city up for me, so I will eternally love him.
Iggy Azalea.
I think somebody who is a very genuine person, somebody who had a really rough ride, and I think somebody who deserves a lot of kindness now, you know? So, yeah, and someone with a great ass.
Stargate. You can include Tim and Danny in that. I know it's a lot of people in one, but we got to, you know.
They're all bold.
Yeah, that's right.
They're all bold. I think, yeah, Stargate. I mean, I love Tim and Danny. They're the ones, but I'll just talk about like the like original Stargates, the original Gateheads. They're so great. I really admire them because they've obviously like, I mean, I admire them. I think like sometimes they think I'm just kind of like trolling them the whole time because I'm always like being like mean to them or taking the piss out of them or something. But I actually, they're like kind of inspirational to me because I think that there aren't many producers of their level who are so selfless, and they really put the time in, and like they really work so hard, and they show up to the studio on time, whether you're the biggest artist in the world or a brand new artist. They listen to your opinion. They're so open. And I think, yeah, I just think that's rare. You know, I think they don't have egos. Like they really are there to like make music, and they really care about music. And I think that's really cool.
Sophie.
Genius. Sophie is a genius. And I'm so happy that you mentioned her because she's like, I think somebody who's really going to change the landscape of pop music over the next couple of years with the production that she does. I mean, it's so like aggressive and beautiful and extreme. And I feel like now we're moving into a space in music where there's like room for that, like not just in kind of like, you know, in like more like left sort of like underground world, but in like pop. Like I think pop artists are willing to kind of take a risk with stuff, and I know Sophie's been working with some really amazing like bigger people, and I just think Sophie's the future. Yeah.
What's advice you'd give an up-and-coming songwriter?
Be careful what you put on the internet, and
just, or you might just have a cover.
Yeah.
Of Soldier Boy.
Exactly. And I don't know. Like, I would say, you know, it's difficult. I would say, like, just do what the fuck you feel. Like, don't get bogged down by theory and, like, what people have done before and, like, reading books about, like, fucking Max Martin, even though he's a genius. Like, who cares? Like, create your own story and, I think songs are so fluid now. Like, it's not about making a song with like verse, chorus, verse, like middle eight, chorus, end. It can be anything. So just do what you feel. Like, create your own language, I think.
I wish we could keep going because there are so many things that I still want to ask you because they're really, you know, it's when I get a call to write with you, I'm always so stoked. Because I know that art will come out of it.
Right. That's very nice of you, thanks.
And that's really hard in our world because you do go into a session and you have a little bit of, they're going to want this and this person wants that. And how do you facilitate this and do, it's all, there's a lot of pressure to create a song that they being the powers that be can spend hundreds of thousands to promote and all this other stuff. And in reality, if you don't create a piece of art that day, they won't have anything to do.
Right.
And you create art even when you're not trying. It's your whole brand is, you're so aware of it, and you're creating it from the brand, from your Instagram to your album covers to curating your shows that you're doing with your artists. It's just, you live it in such an authentic way. And if you still think you're not cool, and I'm here constantly feeling like that's me also trying to be cool. And when I'm around you, I'm cooler.
Oh,
so thank you for doing this. And thank you for every day that we've written together and that we will write together. I'm a fan. I'm proud of you. Oh. And good luck on this tour.
Thank you. This has been so fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to David Silberstein from Mega House Music and Michael White. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.